Thanks, Boyd. And yes, indeed, this is the first official episode of the Television Time Remaining podcast. I'm your host, Bruce, and I'm joined, of course, by my comrade, John. Say hello, John.
Hello, John. I'm the young whippersnapper. Don't forget that.
Oh, that's true. I got to remember to get that in.
At the tender age of 40, I'm the young gun. I'm the Magnum TA to your Mr. Wrestling 2.
That seems appropriate somehow. I am getting to be the surly old man, so I can live with that.
Okay.
Absolutely. I may start wearing a mask to record this and see what that sounds
like. A mask and just Fruit of the Looms.
There you go. That's a visual I can probably leave our viewers with. All right, so this is episode 117.
Yeah.
From December 3rd, 1981. That's what we're talking about.
Yes, today. It's our debut, our maiden voyage, if you will, sailing through the available catalog of Mid-South Wrestling footage.
Yep, and this week we have a guest commentator, and I think we ought to talk about him at the top of the show.
Yes.
Boyd Pierce in his immaculate white and gold suit that looks like it's made out of sofa remnants is joined on commentary by the one and only Bob Roop.
Who's good on commentary.
He is. Actually, you know, as I was watching this, I was thinking, as a kid watching these, Roop didn't do much for me, but watching him now as an old man, I dig it. It was kind of like a test balloon for what Kurt Angle would become, I thought a little bit.
I actually made notes like that. Like, I felt like Roop, you know, update his moves a little bit, sure, but he would have fit in great in like that Timothy Thatcher era of Evolve or in like Ring of Honor, or, you know, that I could see him fitting in well, especially in like that super indie type environment. Just because of his background and, you know, just some of the things he could do. I mean, he was a spry dude for his size.
Yeah, he was a little low on the charisma scale, but I wrote down, he said in the intro that he'd forgotten more about wrestling than most people ever know. That's a solid catchphrase.
Yeah. Hey, if charisma's an issue, then Timothy Thatcher wouldn't have had the Evolve belt for like a year and a half or 2 years.
All right. So in an effort to shore himself up and prove that he was a man among men, the first match on our first episode is a taped match featuring the one and only Bob Roop against a young man with dark hair named Buddy Landell,
who kind of looks like he's doing like a Scott Baio cosplay. With that short black hair. And just, nice. It's weird. I will be interested to see when Landell comes back and is actually, you know, relevant, if they make mention of these early job matches. I don't know if they do. I have no clue. Because if you didn't watch last week, like 98% of this Mid-South stuff, I've never seen. Whereas Bruce grew up in Louisiana and watched it on TV every week. So.
And like I mentioned last week, one of the fun things is going to be watching, as I said last week, it's like Pet Sematary. They go away, and they're not necessarily the same person when they come back. And Landell may be the prime exemplar of that. You know, he's just a very generic piece of fodder this week. And he's going to come back, and you know he's going to come back as the character we all know and love. So that's going to be fun to see, because I don't remember how long it takes. But he did not fare well against Bob Roop in this match.
He did not. It got real out of hand real quick. I did enjoy his. I referred to it in my notes as the squashiest of squashes, because like Roop gets that one punch in, and then from there it's just all Bob Roop. Enjoy the twitchy leg cell on the shoulder breaker at the end.
Okay, see, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I have a note here about the same thing, that Landell twitches and sells like he's dying. So he clearly had something going for him.
I mean, it looked like he had a seizure or like a stinger or something, so it was an effective sell.
Yeah, I mean, the only other note I have that I, just because I think it's funny, I wrote, Roop looks like Uncle Sam vomited on him in that singlet with all the stars and stripes on it.
He looks like, if you just had the tank top part, he looks like the guys that show up to like the 4th of July like festival or barbecue, just inappropriately dressed.
Right. Some really short cutoffs and maybe a gimme hat.
Denim cutoffs, like a baseball cap, and the really way too snug and not enough fabric to it Star Spangled tank top.
Yep, that's exactly what he looks like. But like I said, I remember thinking Roop was kind of a wet blanket back then in 81, but I found myself enjoying his mic work and his ring work a whole lot more as an old man. So I've got no problem with Bob Roop today.
I also am pro Roop at the moment.
So we can firmly come down pro Roop so far. All right. So let's see. The second match for today is Paul Orndorff versus Tony Charles.
Yeah. Tony Charles, I guess, I'm assuming he's a World of Sport guy. I've never seen him before, but he definitely had that influence to him. My favorite part of this match was definitely when he countered the monkey flip and somehow came up with Orndorff's leg and like wrenched on it. I thought that was a super cool little counter that he did there.
Yeah, I wrote down that I believe they introduced him as being from Wales, and I wrote that he looks like a Welsh Bullet Bob Armstrong. That was my initial thought as that match started. My notes on the match are kind of more along the lines of the things going on around. I think I was maybe paying more attention to the commentary. Because this is when Roop started talking about the whopping $1,000 bounty he put out on Ted DiBiase. And Boyd Pierce was hyping the dream match that's going to be held at the January 6th taping.
Well, you send in your request to the station.
Yes, your local station.
Yeah. And I actually put in my notes. I wondered who we would pick as our dream match to mail into the station. I mean, if it was young person, you, I imagine JYD would be involved.
Oh, he would absolutely have been one of my choices. And I haven't looked ahead to see who was actually in it. I vaguely remember, but I know they were talking about Andre, and I know they were talking about Dusty. And at this point, it's before you've got Mr. Olympia or any of the other guys that will come in to back JYD and eventually turn on him, as they always do in classic style. But I think I was, if I remember, and it's been a long time, but I think the thought of the guys that we didn't see every week coming in that they were talking about, that you kind of, at this point, I don't even know if we had cable in 81. So I don't even know if I'd ever seen Dusty other than in the after mags and hearing people talk about him, maybe like here's some footage to hype a one-off appearance. So the thought of some of the big names coming from outside was kind of exciting. But JYD for sure. And then beyond that, I don't really have a feel yet for who all's in the territory at the moment. So it's hard for me to say.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, if it's anybody, also if it was me at that time, I would have no opinion because I'm like 3 years old, but knowing what I know now about wrestling, I don't know. Maybe like, how about a JYD gets a shot at the NWA title? Was Harley Race the champion at this point? I'm guessing December of 81.
Yeah, that sounds right. I think that was right in there before the Harley Dusty Rick.
Yeah,
flip flop.
I could be down for a JYD Harley Race NWA title match. It was good enough for WrestleMania 3. So, you know, I also just sent you, not to segue, I just sent you a GIF or GIF or however they say it from something that happened on Raw, like as we're recording, if you want to see Brock Lesnar murder a Singh brother.
Okay, well, I saw it pop up. I'm going to.
Yeah, you got to, we got to pause because I want to hear your reaction to this.
Okay, as we know, okay, my phone is loading slowly. I'll let you know when it comes up.
Okay, fair enough. Another observation I had in this match, watching it, is one thing that happens often on this show is the good old 80s stomp and punch.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Which is a fixture of wrestling that has kind of gone by the wayside. But I see Stomp and Punch, and I see people that were wrestling at this time complaining about the new thing where you slap your leg when you hit a move, when you hit a strike, I should say. And it seems to me the Stomp and Punch is just the 80s version of the leg slap. Like, they're the same thing. You're making a noise to make your strike sound more impactful. It's just, back then it was like the boom of stomping on the mat, and now it's the whack of slapping your leg. Like, what's the difference?
Yeah. So, that's a good observation. Oh, the GIF just loaded. Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah.
That man will never walk again.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, see, if Bob Roop could have thrown a suplex like that, he could have been NWA champion.
It's the most entertaining thing Lesnar's done on WWE in months. Anyway.
Sorry, we digress. Perhaps we won't record during Raw again. The other note I have for match number two was I noted there were a lot of green stains on the mat, which can mean only one thing.
Kabuki.
Kabuki's in town.
Oh.
Yep.
All right, any thoughts on my stomp punch leg slap?
No, I think analogy? It's very astute. I think you're right. Because I know when I started watching, when I first figured out that the stomps and the punches were coordinated, I was like, oh, that's how they're making the noise. Well, you know, surely they're connecting, but they're making it louder for the cheap seats with the stomp.
And there's still people that do the stomp.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't understand. Sure. And I know the leg slap sometimes is dumb. It's real dumb sometimes. Like, Michael Elgin is one of the worst defenders of it. Like, you don't make a whip smack a noise when you, for example, elbow somebody or clothesline somebody. And in Japan, like, he's just, it's thigh slapping Michael Elgin all the time. And it gets excessive. But in general, as an effect, it's no different than when I was in a play last year and there was a fight scene and they were doing the leg slapping thing to, like, punctuate the faux punches.
Yeah.
What's
no,
the
I
difference?
Mean, there is none. The difference is grumpy old men, which I think is becoming a theme of this podcast, as it turns out.
Fair enough. So moving on.
Match number three. This is exciting because it's our first appearance by a young Ted DiBiase as he takes on the Polish Prince, Ed Wiskowski.
Yes, who would go on to infamy as the super racist Colonel De Beers, transplanted South African apartheid guy in the AWA, which was just awful.
Yeah,
like,
that
dude.
That was ill-advised for sure. But, I mean, if you're going to remember one of his characters, are you going to remember the Polish Prince, or are you going to remember Colonel De Beers?
You're probably going to remember De Beers, but he did have some good stuff with Buddy Rose in Portland.
Okay, well, you and I have talked, and I don't know if it actually made it into one of the broadcasts yet, but that's one of the few territories I've not seen, so I'm going to have to take your word
for
it.
There's a lot on YouTube.
Okay. All right, let's see. What do I have here?
This match was, I actually saw, because I watched this episode months ago when we thought, let's start our podcast. And then, like, 6 months later, we're like, let's actually start our podcast. So on the second watch of this match, it was a lot better for me. I don't know if I was paying more attention, if I was just more engaged. It's just a good, solid, basic wrestling match.
It's a solid mid-card match. I thought the same thing. I was expecting, and it's not to say that DiBiase wasn't fluid like he always was, but I was thinking more of DiBiase a little later in his career, and he was still younger here, still a really solid guy in the ring, but I thought he had really good chemistry with Wiskowski. I was impressed with the amount of offense Wiskowski got in. He made DiBiase work for that win, and I enjoyed it.
Sweet-ass power slam, too.
One of the best power slams of all time.
It's no Buzz Sawyer power slam, but it's close.
I said one of... it's always so smooth. It's just like water. I wrote down that throughout the match, Roop was beefing with DiBiase. These two guys did not like each other, so that was fun to see Roop continuing to heel commentate.
Of course.
and even claiming he had the counter for DiBiase's figure four that he was gonna sell to the highest bidder, which was kind of cool. Very Healy.
Yeah. I want to talk about this next match, which is our first title match in this journey. We got some, and it's another one of those, it seems like a random 80s pairing, but Cowboy Bob Orton defending the prestigious Mississippi State title against Jimmy Garvin, who is just completely jacked.
Yeah, super that was
swole,
shocking.
Super swole, barrel-chested, you know, longshoreman Jimmy Garvin against Bob Orton. And this match, I thought, was in-ring the best match on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I want to, just because it's before we have video, I want to kind of give a little background on Jimmy Garvin here in Mid-South. He had kind of, he'd shown up a few months prior to this match and had pulled one of those classic territorial upsets, beating Ernie Ladd for the Louisiana title in March, which you can imagine how well that went over with the Big Cat.
Mm.
He lost that title a couple months later to the Super Destroyer, but kind of put him on the map. He was, you know, he'd been around for a few weeks. He was doing like the solid mid-card matches and then just stunned everyone by beating Ladd, which kind of set him on the course to where he is in this. So I just wanted to mention that because that's my first real memory of Garvin is him upsetting Ladd. So
yeah.
Just thought it bore. And then he's another Pet Cemetery guy. That's what I'm going to start calling him, by the way. He's going to go away and turn into something completely different. From here, he's going to go to Florida next. That's where it gets gorgeous. And then to Texas.
Which is awesome.
Oh, the high point of his career, it has to be.
And then I like the story of this match. Garvin kept doing the run up the corner ropes and jump off into the side headlock takeover move. Which would fit in pretty well in modern wrestling style. But he went for it and he hit it. And he went for it again and he hit it. And he went for it the third time and Orton blocks it and just drops him on his head in the back suplex to set up the finish. And I thought it was a really clever way to lay out the match. And it was really well done how they put all that together, because it didn't have, it still had kind of its, you know, you got your shine and then your heat and then your finish. But it was so atypical of a lot of the matches that we've seen to embody the quote-unquote wrestling formula, because it was kind of out of nowhere, but it made total sense because he'd scouted it out after it happened twice before, and this time he blocked him, you know, the savvy veteran champion and what have you, and made him pay.
Yeah, no, it was that was very nice psychology in ring, and I don't know that I can add to that. Here's my attempt at a joke here for this match. I wrote it because it is the early 80s. It looked like John C. Reilly was wrestling Ron Jeremy in that match. So, I don't know. I've watched this DVD several times in anticipation of doing something with it, and that I keep coming back to that. It really is. Orton looks so much like John C. Reilly and Garvin Ron Jeremy, but whatever.
I also like some Orton selling where he was selling the strikes by covering up and acting and he's disoriented and wobbling and all that. He made it look like it actually hurt, you know?
Yeah.
I liked that.
With the cover up though, do you think that might be where his arm issue started? Maybe he had a little fracture.
Dude,
there.
Who knows?
And it only got worse, you know?
Who knows?
That's why he's,
you know, he wrestled a couple weeks ago for, I think, AIW in Cleveland. And we've spoke of this before off there. I hope that his arm heals one day. You know, thoughts and prayers to Bob Orton and his broken arm.
He's in our prayers.
Yes.
I mean, we hope at some point he'll get the care that he deserves to get that healed up.
Yeah. You can keep your own doctor, am I right? Anyway, we will take a little break now. And when we return, we will look at the biggest pile of crap finish that you're going to see in a while, in my opinion. So
we'll be right back with that from John.
Check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features and retrospectives, reviews of wrestling books, video games and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at the PWO forums.
And we're back. And so as John so eloquently previewed on our way out, we're up to what I have to assume is this week's television main event. And it is my personal favorite, Junkyard Dog, taking on not Paul, but Terry Orndorff.
About half a foot shorter.
He's actually legitimately Paul Orndorff's brother.
About two-thirds of the muscles. Didn't seem like he was a bad wrestler from what little we see of him wrestling.
And so I think before we get into this match, I'm going to have to do the best I can to recall what led to this. So,
okay. I did some research too, if that helps. I can fill in some gaps. I Googled some things.
I do have some gaps. So,
okay.
JYD and Terry Orndorff had been tag team partners. Mm-hmm. There was a match. Do you remember who the match was that they lost to?
I didn't remember seeing the notes of that, just that they were partners and Orndorff turned on him, which led me to write and ask you if JYD was the Sting of his era. And it sounds like he kind of was.
Oh, it was absolutely the Sting, the Hogan. He was the top guy. The partners came in. The partners got jealous. The partners turned. It happened time and we'll see it happen time and time again. So
he just needs a friend.
Every dog needs a bone to chew on.
Maybe that's why he leaves. Maybe that's why he goes dead. Because he knew Hogan knew the sting of the betrayal.
Perhaps. They were kindred spirits, maybe? Soulmates?
Like, I need a friend. I need a friend, too. Let's be friends together and go and wrestle in Madison Square Garden. Like, maybe.
That could be. So, at some point, and the math is fuzzy, but at some point there was a match where the loser of the match had to wear the yellow mask.
Yes.
Because they were a coward. The yellow
dog. I have that. Yeah, they had a match and Orndorff was forced to wear the yellow mask as a sign of cowardice. He did an interview where he would even wear it to like the grocery store and stuff. He would wear it out around town.
That's right. I remember that. So, and that yellow dog mask shows up in other places later. And obviously, this is the first time I remember seeing it. But at some point, the gimmick became then Orndorff was wearing the mask for quote unquote good luck. And it was just to facilitate the mask confusion angle. I noticed in our final match, and we'll get to that, but there's a very young Brian Blair in that match. And I have to think he was watching from backstage and said, hey, I like the way that works. Maybe someday I'll have a friend in the WWE. And we can do something with masks that are kind of yellow. It could have been that. I could be wrong.
It could have. That could have been the seeds of a modestly successful tag team.
In fact, I think I'm gonna say that that's what happened because it just it's inspirational and I like it.
Sure.
So
you got anything else to say about this match?
I'm gonna let you have the floor, my friend. Okay. Take it away.
So let me set the scene for you here. They start out the match, and it's all fists a-flailing because it's your big grudge match. And then it just falls apart. Like, Paul Orndorff comes out to... I don't know what happened here. This is one that, like, I'd like the director's commentary, like, shoot, breaking it down thing. Because Paul Orndorff comes out to, like, slip his brother, you know, the gimmick, the foreign object to put in the mask. Except he does it right in front of the referee. Like, the referee turns around too soon and sees this happening. So then Paul Orndorff decides, well, I'm just going to get in the ring. And he just starts brawling with JYD. And Bob Roop, to his credit, is like, he's on commentary like, oh, well, it's a no DQ match because, you know, if Orndorff loses, he leaves the promotion or leaves the territory. So, you know, it's anything goes, blah, blah, blah. Terry Orndorff loads the mask. JYD goes to headbutt him. He headbutts him. JYD takes the bump. But Terry Orndorff doesn't go for the pin. Instead, we're still shenaniganing around for a little bit. Terry Orndorff bumps out the floor to one side. JYD somehow goes backwards and turns to the referee, who takes the roughest bump of the whole match out to the floor. And then Paul Orndorff comes in. Now he's got the mask on. I feel like I'm You ever watch Seinfeld?
Yes.
You know that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer's trying to get the toad to the emergency room?
Yes.
And he ends up like telling the whole story on the bus and fighting the mugger and driving the bus and everything. I feel like I'm that describing this because it just gets more and more ridiculous. But anyway, Paul Orndorff gets in. Now he's got the mask on. JYD throws him over the top rope. And the match that Bob Roop already said was no DQ ends on a DQ for going over the top rope. And also, Mike George is brawling with some random other guy at ringside.
And there's this week's hot Mike George action.
Who was that?
I didn't write it down. I don't know.
Were we supposed to know?
I don't think so.
Like, this was just such a mess. And I'm guessing, as someone who has done some things with the wrestling himself in a professional or semi-professional capacity, that the referee probably wasn't supposed to see the foreign object thing happen, and then they just ad-libbed a bunch of stuff.
And I'm hoping,
because if this was the plan, we're going to do the foreign object, he's going to do the headbutt, that's not going to be the finish, we're going to switch masks, switch who's under the mask, and then do like a throw over the top rope thing. Plus, never mind the fact that Paul Orndorff is like 6 inches taller, twice as muscly, and like two tanning shades darker. And was wearing black trunks, and his brother's wearing red trunks. Like, there's no confusing those two.
It's real bad. Ill-conceived. It's poorly executed. It's ill-conceived. It's poorly executed. And not really the first taste of a main event I wanted you to have in your mouth going into this, but...
I will say this, though. JYD, holy crap balls, is over and super ripped.
Yes, I had forgotten. Because
he had the belly, you know, for most of his time in WWF. I think he'd started to... He was slowing down a little bit by then, I think. But good Lord.
He is swole.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and you got your first taste of that electricity in the building I was talking about last week. I mean, it's a small little building. It was the Irish McNeil Boys Club, so it wasn't a great big building. And when they pull back in that match so you can see all the fracas going on outside, you can see how small it is. But good Lord, the place blew up when he walked in.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was definitely a big pop. But the match was a big pile of crap.
Agreed. I knew it was going to be the DQ and the no DQ match that sent you over the edge.
That's why I think it had to be something got missed. Because I've been in that situation. I've been on commentary and having to explain around stuff that's happening in the ring that makes no sense. And then something happens that completely contradicts what you've just been trying to cover up. And you just kind of be like, well, that just happened, folks. You know, like,
right.
Sometimes there's no, you know, somebody misses their call or their spot or something. And just, it happens. Like one time we were doing a show and like they brought in Easy Money, who lived locally. And he was going to come out and get in an impromptu tag match at the end. And he's like, we're putting the TV title on the line, on the mic, unprompted, anything. So we're just like, well, I guess the title's on the line now. And then they won. So we're just like, okay. Because he wasn't supposed to win the title. So it gets fun, you know. There's no net. Although this was a taping. They could have fixed it if they really wanted to.
No, they couldn't have.
They could have.
That would have broken it, man. They couldn't have. There were no second takes.
Definitely not in this case.
Clearly. So
that was the second take. We got problems.
Before we move on from your first giant pile of crap, there's an article I read somewhere years ago with Terry Orndorff talking about his time in Mid-South, specifically how he's one of the few guys who ever go over Junkyard Dog in the Superdome, which is nothing short of mind-boggling to me. I will find that article and I will...
I think I was reading that. Was it on like the Slam Canadian site?
Yes, absolutely. So I'll find that article and we'll put that out on our social media just so, because I think there's a picture of Terry Orndorff in there as well. So just as a little piece of supplemental intelligence. We'll get that out there too. And then we get to our first standby match.
Standby matches, which explain to the people listening to this what the whole concept of the standby match is.
So the standby match is when we have, believe it or not, television time remaining after our main event, and we have to fill that time with more matches. Hey, I wonder if that's how we got our name.
Could be.
Wouldn't be the strangest thing we've ever done.
No.
So this first standby match, our television time remaining match, features the Iron Sheik and a man who named himself after malt liquor, King Cobra. And it's not necessarily those things that are important, I don't think. What is important is this is our first appearance by one General Skandar Akbar.
Oh, yes. Mid-South mainstay.
He is the consummate evil foreigner to Bill Watts's uber patriotism for the next 7 years. If bad things are going to happen, you can be sure Akbar is going to be involved. And that's all I have to say about Akbar at the moment.
There you go. The match was okay. It was one of those matches like there was nothing wrong with it, but it's not one you need to like go out of your way to watch either.
They were
moving quick. You know, it was for an 80s TV match. They were moving the whole time. Like they were working quick. My favorite part though was when King Cobra went to slam Iron Sheik's out on the apron. King Cobra tries to bring him in and slam him, and Sheik hooks his curled toe boots over the top rope. Like, ha ha, I'm countering your slam attempt. And King Cobra just drops him, and he just plummets face first to the mat.
That was nice, because usually the announcers made a big deal out about how potentially illegal and certainly dangerous those boots were. And
they did it in this, because he like gets kicked in the throat, and Boyd Pierce freaks out.
So just to see the boots backfire is a nice touch, and I would like to applaud whoever came up with it. I believe Sheik will be around for a little while longer. And Sheik has gone crazy, and he's old, and he can barely walk. But he was doing a pretty fine job in this match, I thought.
Sheik used to be able to work. Like he was...
Yeah, and this was evidence of it. And so there's a program, and I hope it's not before we're doing this, between he and Paul Ellering that was awesome. I don't remember where that falls in the chronology. I did actually get the giant box of DVDs out of the closet yesterday. And you should have seen the look on my 15-year-old son's face when they saw how much of it I had. So I'm going to probably do a little looking ahead just to see where we are, just to kind of refresh my memory. But if we get the Sheik Ellering stuff, just the dichotomy of them, because this was before Wall Street, Paul Ellering. This was when it was all tie-dye and bleach blonde, and let's talk about jacked.
I've seen some Memphis stuff of his from like 1980, and he's almost doing like a Chris Masters gimmick.
Yeah.
Where he's just the super ripped bodybuilder type. And I'm like, that is not what I expected from Paul Ellering.
And the angle, if I can remember correctly, involved, of course, the Persian clubs, which was a nice bit for the two of them to get into, because they were both yoked up so much. So I'll see if we're going to get to that, and if not, we'll discuss it some more.
We'll discuss it next time. And then we close out with a meaningless tag match.
Yes. With
the Monk and Jerry Novak against Brian Blair and Frank Monty. Frank Monty, who basically just went around to different territories and was a jobber to the stars, from what I've researched, basically. Brian Blair, who went on, as you mentioned, to be half of the Killer Bees. Novak, who did a little bit of stuff in Memphis, is like the Bounty Hunters team. And a guy who calls himself the Monk.
Did he wear a robe? I don't remember.
No, he wore his cloak he wore to the ring was pretty cool, but other than that, he's just normal 80s wrestler guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you would
at least go all in on the robe if you're going to call yourself the Monk.
Would a Monk even wrestle, though? I would feel that would like violate some of your vows.
I have two words for you. Friar Ferguson.
Doesn't count. Because okay. It was just bad. Also, if you put the monk in a submission hold, is he allowed to like verbally give up because of vow of silence?
Ooh. That's
we ask the tough questions here.
We do, and we can't even always answer them.
This as far as the match, there was nothing really wrong with it, but I actually wrote down, it's clear they're just killing time until the bell rings.
Yes.
Nobody even goes for a pin. Nobody really ends up getting any like heat, or nobody even gets isolated discernibly over it. It's just 5 or 6 minutes of like the wrestler equivalent of vamping. Like, we're just going to kill time.
Yeah,
until the bell rings and we know to stop.
Yep, until the music starts and this one's over. Yeah, it's a big, as someone said, a nothing burger. There's nothing to it. It is absolutely killing time. In fact, all my notes are related to what was being said around the match. I've got Roop still talking about how he's figured out a reversal for the figure four.
Mm-hmm.
They're hyping the hell out of the dream match. They're hyping
Orndorff and DiBiase next week, which mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, that'll, you know, already yeah. held my interest for that to be a thing.
And those two guys were having some, yeah, there was a lot of crisscross in these feuds because DiBiase and Orndorff weren't getting along, and Orndorff and Roop were allied, and DiBiase and Roop weren't getting along. And what they're building to, and I'm just not a surprise because this is like 30-year-old stuff, but is DiBiase's eventual heel turn. But it's all little pieces, wheels inside of wheels, building to that. And that was my first thought, was knowing it's coming, seeing it now, that's what they're doing. It's little pieces here. They'll talk about DiBiase taking shortcuts, and so it's all going to start clicking into place here in short order. So watch for that. The only other note I have was that a very excited Boyd Pierce hyped up the very popular Little Midgets would be on the show next week. And so not the very popular Big Midgets and not the unpopular Little Midgets, but the very popular Little Midgets. So we have that to look forward to as well.
I'm excited.
We got DiBiase, Orndorff, and Midgets. Come on.
I hope it's not a short match. Well, thanks for the one and only episode of this podcast now.
It was fun while it lasted, folks.
We had a good run. Tune in next week for the best of and worst from our one episode run. Right. So who is your... We're going to pick an MVP, I guess, of each week.
We'll try it and see how it works.
Sure. So who's your MVP?
He never got in the ring in a live match, but I'm going Bob Roop. He was solid on commentary throughout. He beat the hell out of Buddy Landell. Made me reconsider what I thought of him. So I'm going with Roop. What about you?
I'm also going with Roop. This was in many ways the Bob Roop show. Commentary, he's pushing his own issue with DiBiase. And there's sometimes when he's on commentary and Boyd Pierce isn't saying anything. Roop is just calling the match solo. And you don't miss that. You don't miss Boyd's voice because Roop's just doing such a... Granted, he's looking at it through those heel goggles. But... he's doing a fine job calling the action, and you just roll with it, and you're engaged. So, definitely for me, it's Bob Roop.
All right, so that's week one MVP Bob Roop, and it's kind of funny because I don't know if you ever listened to the Busted Open show on XM, but they were a couple weeks ago. The host and Tommy Dreamer were having Bob Roop Appreciation Day, and knowing this was coming up, I chuckled. And apparently he called into the show today and I missed it. So I may have to go try and find that on demand just to see what old Bob had to say since he's our week one MVP.
Fair enough. If he's on Twitter, we may need to... I can't imagine Bob Roop. For some reason, I don't think he's on Twitter. But if he is, if anybody listens to this and know how to track down Bob Roop, shoot him the link.
Let him know he's our week one MVP and we were both mightily impressed with his work. John, you want to tell the folks where they can find us?
Well, yeah, of course, this podcast. We're excited to be part of the Pro Wrestling Only Network. You can subscribe to Pro Wrestling Only on iTunes and get our show and all the other great shows. The Lucha Aftergram was just wrapped up looking at every episode of season 4 of that show. Greetings from Allentown, Worldcast, which kind of does what we're doing with Mid-South, except with World Class. Lots of different shows. You can follow us specifically on Facebook and Twitter at TVTR Podcast. And you can follow me on Twitter at John_Morehouse. That's MOOREHOUSE. And you can follow Bruce on Twitter at Bruce Cook here.
I'm not as active on Twitter as John, but I'm going to do better.
That's all we can do.
That's all we can hope for any given day.
That's what that's what they said after that train wreck. JYD, Terry Orndorff finished. They're like, we're going to do better.
And they did. And for that, we're thankful. All right, so next week. Actually, you know what? I have my DVD here. So let's see. What do we got next week? We've got Garvin versus Wiskowski. We got, the stuff you talked about. And so we'll get to that. Oh, it's a North American title match with DiBiase and Orndorff. So that'll be excellent. So until next week, I'm Bruce Cook. He's John Morehouse. And this has been Television Time Remaining.